Hello and welcome to the IRPP's Interview with the Author series. I'm joined today by the authors of the IRPP study, Restructuring the Canadian Senate Through Elections. Bruce Hicks is a professor at Concordia University. His colleague, André Blais, is a political science professor at the Université de Montréal. Dr. Blais also holds the Canada Research Chair in Electoral Studies. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Hello.
What was the Harper government's plan to reform the Senate, and does it look like the Conservatives will try to introduce similar legislation once the new parliament is in session?
Well, the Harper government's proposal, which was first introduced in following their election in 2006, is to hold consultative elections province-wide in order to fill all future vacancies in the Canadian Senate. And I think it's very clear that it's their intention to reintroduce that at the earliest possible moment. The Prime Minister, following this past election, has mused publicly that he'd be willing to stack the Senate in order to get this legislation passed. So that's a strong signal, not only that he plans on reintroducing the legislation, but that he fully intends to go ahead with it and use the power of the office in order to try and convince Parliament to adopt it.
What are the implications of this kind of reform, Dr. Blais?
Well, the implications, I guess, that are the greatest interest, I guess, at least as far as I'm concerned, concern the choice of the electoral system. This is a major innovation in that it will be using single transferable vote, which has never been utilized as such in federal elections, and which has been on the electoral reform agenda, especially in British Columbia. So this is, I guess, a very innovative proposal in terms of the kind of voting system that we'll be using.
What are the consequences of using the single transferable vote?
Well, I think at the at face value, one of the consequences of using any vote is you change the dynamics of the Senate. The Senate is currently an appointed body. Senators are very aware of that fact. They occasionally stand up to the House of Commons and the government of the day, but only when they feel confident that they have the Canadian public strongly behind them, like they did over the goods and services tax, and usually even then just long enough to hold a federal election. Once you have senators who are directly elected, they will make claims to having their own mandates and are more likely to stand up against the government and against the lower chamber on a more regular basis. So you will change the dynamics of how the two chambers relate to one another, and I think that's true regardless of the electoral system.
Dr. Hicks, getting back to Harper's reform plan, do you think it's unconstitutional?
Well, the question of constitutional is a complicated one. My sense is that if this was referred to the Supreme Court, and the Canadian Senate has asked that it be referred to the Supreme Court, that the court would probably find the legislation meets the letter of the Constitution, but maybe not the spirit. This is the sort of ruling that they handed down in the ruling on secession and on patriation and a few other instances. The Canadian Supreme Court doesn't tend to make rulings on or try to enforce constitutional convention, but that doesn't constitutional convention is just that. It's a question of constitutionality. And changing the dynamics, changing the method of selection of senators is clearly intended to be done with the concurrence of the provinces. The Constitution Act 1982 specifically says that the changing method of selection needs to be done by with the concurrence of seven provinces representing 50% of the population, and this was made even tougher under the Jean Chrétien government following the Quebec referendum, is they added an extra requirement that it also has to reach the concurrence of all five regions of Canada, which includes both Ontario and Quebec. So certainly the spirit of the Constitution, the implication there is that changing the method of selection is something that requires federal-provincial negotiations.
In your study, you call on Canadians to get more involved, to weigh in on the discussions around Senate reform. I'd like to ask you both, and perhaps, Dr. Hicks, you can start, why, in your view, should Canadians care?
Well, legislative institutions are ultimately the represent the values of a society. They are the methods we choose to represent us. Canadians don't make decisions on a day-to-day basis on governance. That we delegate that. We have a representative democracy. And in Canada, because we've adopted the Westminster system, is we have and a bicameral system, is we have two chambers, of which the government in turn then becomes accountable to the lower house, but ultimately to Parliament as a whole. And so this is a fundamental reflection of both us as a society and how decisions are made in this country.
I agree entirely. I think that this is a great opportunity to now to start, you know, a real good reflection and discussion about whether we want a Senate or not first, and if we want a Senate, what kind of powers it should have, and how we want to have the members elected. And what's very interesting in this proposal is that there would be, if it were to be adopted, two different kind of voting systems adopted for two different kind of elections. And I think that's very interesting, you know, idea that you would have different people elected under different rules, and it will be interesting to see how legitimate the two systems will be perceived to be.
How challenging do you think it will be to engage Canadians?
Well, that's an interesting question, because this legislation was tabled immediately following or shortly after the last election. It was when this legislation stalled before Parliament, the government prorogued, and I don't believe coincidentally. I think they prorogued in part because this legislation stalled in the Senate. They reintroduced this legislation, and they'll be reintroducing it a third time. Now, to introduce such substantive changes, one of which is an actual amendment to the Constitution, even if it is being done under the clause that allows the federal government to amend the Constitution, there's been very little dialogue about it, which would imply that both probably Canadians as a whole and their representatives in the media who are there to ask questions on issues that they think are of concern to Canadians haven't so far been engaged. So, you know, it doesn't seem so far that there's a level of interest, perhaps because there's a lack of interest in the Senate generally, but it's one of these things that if Canadians don't engage and this just becomes a fait accompli, it's too late to engage after the fact. You have to start the dialogue well in advance for Canadians to properly consider the implications.
Dr. Blais, I'd like to ask you, what other countries can we look to as examples or models of an effective and relevant upper chamber?
Well, the most obvious cases would probably be Australia, because in Australia, there is a Senate, and the Senate is elected through the same electoral system, the STV, and it has very interesting set of consequences. Of course, Australia also some special features, but I think if you have to look at the case, I think Australia would be the best example of what kind of consequences we could expect from such a new system. One of the most important one being that in many cases, in the Senate, you're likely to have the government is unlikely to hold a majority. So now you have minority governments in the House, but even in cases where you have a majority government in the House, you could also have that government could find itself in the minority position in the Senate, and that's an interesting, I guess, question that we would have to deal with.
Dr. Hicks,
yeah.
Do you have other examples that you'd like to talk about in addition to Australia?
Well, I would agree that Australia provides the most striking example, both because it's the system being proposed and that it has inherited the British system. In a way, Canada can learn from pretty much every country that uses bicameralism. There are no shortage of examples out there on how governments have or how societies have structured their parliaments, and provide advice on the powers the second chamber should have, whether or not it should have the full constitutional powers of the lower house, or whether it should only have suspensive veto. There are different mechanisms used. There are also, I think, general lessons that can be taken, and one of which would sort of commend the proposal being put forward by the government, is the idea that the second chamber should structurally be different than the lower chamber, whether it's through the method of selection, such as a different electoral system, or in terms of the way you draw boundaries, province-wide, for example, is the way the Canadian one is done versus the House of Commons, which has individual ridings, timing of election. All of these lead to different dynamics and different structural outcomes. And I think it's important that Canadians look at the alternatives that are out there in order to start to consider what they actually want for their own country.
I know that in your study that you were both careful not to recommend, to make any specific recommendations, at least as far as the Harper government's proposal was put forward. Do you have any policy recommendations that you can now issue?
Absolutely none, of course. In my case.
I think we went to pains not to take a position. We do comment that based on the comparative example, the proposals by Harper are very defensible based on what occurs in other countries. This is a very valid system being proposed, both in terms of just an electoral system, but also in terms of what would happen, how it changes Parliament. What we want to do is engage Canadians and get them to engage with the government in a dialogue. So I think the only thing that I would recommend in terms of policy has to do with approach. I think the government needs to be engaging more directly, and the onus is on the government, not on the citizens, to dialogue on these proposals. So if you look at the provinces that have considered changing their electoral system, and most of these changes have been modest, they've suggested adding some additional seats to a legislature in some cases to make it more proportional. In order to even consider such a modest change, they have held public hearings, struck citizens' forums, and even held referenda. The idea that this should just be put before Parliament, dealt with in committee, quickly passed, and even passed using the threat of intimidation, is a bit troubling. My recommendation would be that the government needs to be properly engaging Canadians. This is a constitutional change. Even if we accept that they're doing it legally through their federal authority, constitutional changes, Canadians made very clear in Meech and in Charlottetown, they expect to be engaged in the process. They don't support executive federalism. They don't support being told that this is a done deal and take it or leave it. So I think the onus is on the government to engage Canadians. And because it is a saleable and very defensible system they're proposing, there's no reason they shouldn't.
Well, thank you both very much for your time.
You're welcome.
A pleasure.
Bruce Hicks is a professor at Concordia University, and André Blais is a political science professor at the Université de Montréal. They are the authors of the IRPP study, Restructuring the Canadian Senate Through Elections.